Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 15th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. How you doing?
Great, great. So, D.R., we have talked many times about the divestment movement, and it is back upon us. This past week in the Boston Globe, I wish he was my personal friend, but our sort of hero, Mr. Bill McKibben, put an article in the Boston Globe editorial talking about the divestment of Harvard University's fossil fuel holdings. Mm-hmm. And his example was that basically based on the available public information, of which is relatively small for the Harvard Endowment, that Harvard had invested in Endaco Energy, which is a big energy company, mm-hmm. and had increased its investment sevenfold in the last year, even despite the pleas of its the Harvard community to divest. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly galling that Endaco should be the place that Harvard put its money, because Endaco specializes in discovering new oil reserves. Mm-hmm. That's their stock and trade. That's what they pride themselves on. That's what they tell their investors that they do and why they should invest. And, of course, people listen to the show know that increasing reserves is pointless. Increasing reserves of oil is kind of a pointless exercise because we simply can't take it out of the ground. Mm-hmm. So did you read the McKibben piece, Dion?
It was a great piece, and he notes that Endaco has this sort of rogue reputation. He notes that that 4 years ago, Endaco basically encouraged people to use quote counterinsurgency tactics to go after people who were against fracking.
Yeah,
and just basically that this is sort of like, it's almost like Koch Industries Jr. in terms of what they do, and that Harvard is getting in bed with this company despite Harvard you know trying to falsely profess to embrace the moral high ground on the climate issue is just sickening. As McKibben notes towards the conclusion of the piece, there is no commitment at all. It's just business as usual with a kind of sad obliviousness to the realities of the day. And when you just see Harvard engaging in this sort of behavior, it's like, as I always say, what are they thinking and are they thinking?
Well, I mean, it's the reason that Harvard comes up in these discussions so often is, number one, of course, we're all centered here in the New England area, but Harvard is an iconic global symbol, for better or worse, right? Mm-hmm. It's got all of its problems, but Harvard matters to people far beyond Cambridge, and that's why it's an issue worthy of discussion. The decisions mm-hmm. Harvard makes have ripple effects everywhere. And it turns out that this coming week, the Harvard community, I guess in quotation marks, people from Harvard are planning a week-long set of demonstrations to demand that Harvard divest of these fossil fuels. Right, mm-hmm. DR, do you see any of that?
Yes, it's an event known as Harvard Heat Week, which begins April the 12th and concludes April the 17th. And according to the HarvardHeatWeek.org site, that students, faculty, alumni, and members of the Harvard community will come together on campus to speak out for climate justice, to learn from one another, and take principled action. It will be a series of demonstrations and a series of events, basically making the point that Harvard needs to clean up its act and show some moral leadership for a change, and right. wash their hands of fossil fuel polluters.
I like that phrase, principled action. I wonder what that means, huh?
Exactly.
But
The
so you.
principled action ought to be coming from Harvard President Drew Faust,
Well,
who is
yes.
doing all these speeches and is talking about how horrible, horrible, horrible climate change is, and yet, you know, it's like she is both the person who calls 911 and the person who commits the crime in terms of their dual involvement with this sort of thing.
Well, so you've got this McKibben piece very clearly talking about Indarko, which is a specific example, right? It's a specific embodiment of the problem that we're talking about. You have Harvard, what's called the Harvard Heat Week. I think if you Google it, you'll find it. But then on top of all that, there was a story in the New York Times, which it was in a blog called The Upshot, right, Dan?
Mm-hmm.
It was in a blog on the New York Times, but it's quite a useful piece of journalism, because what it basically does is to take what appear to be fairly standard modeling techniques and basically tries to ask the question of how hot would the world get if we burned all of the known fossil fuels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know there's tons, I mean, there's unimaginable amounts of coal under the ground. We've got tar sands. We've got people exploring in the Arctic. It was just, I heard on the commute home tonight that they've discovered a huge oil field underneath Gatwick Airport north of London. So there are all these specific places. There's Saudi Arabia, there's Iraq, Iran, blah, 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 blah. We know about all this fuel. What happens if we burn it all? And, Diara, I'll let you explain. What is the long-term consequence of burning all that fossil fuel that Anadarko was out there trying to increase the reserves of?
Mm-hmm. The piece was done by Michael Greenstone, a professor of economics at the University of Chicago, and he found that if we burned all the known fossil fuel reserves, the Earth's temperature would go up 16.2 degrees, which, even though he doesn't say this, you know, we can say this, that's a literally hell on Earth.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even that's just a descriptive word, right? I mean,
yeah.
16 centigrade, right? I mean,
yeah.
that's even a bigger number in Fahrenheit, but I mean, it's 16 degrees. And again, I emphasize that people often think 16 degrees seems mild, right? Outside where I'm sitting is probably 40 degrees, and I would much prefer it to be 56 degrees instead of 40 degrees. But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about, we're talking about 16 degrees on average, which means the extremes are really extreme, and they're much more likely. So this an average increase of 16 degrees, if we took all that fossil fuel out of the ground, is, well, more than we can handle. And I think the import of the article is that it goes through a rather nice slicing up of if you burn all the tar sands, this is what you get. If you burn all the coal in Appalachia, here's what you get. And it lays it out in a way that's somewhat equivalent to the famous Bill McKibben Do the Math article, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you can connect how much damage is going to be done by burning that specific amount of fuel, right?
Sure. And somebody points out in the comment section of the piece, a gentleman under the name of Keith Lewis says that, the quote, the article does not account for fossil fuel resources that are not available with current technologies. Therefore, 16 degrees is probably an underestimate, as it's reasonable to assume that drilling and mining technologies will continue to improve to some extent. However, to be fair, it's very hard to calculate the impact of technologies that do not exist, so I completely understand why the author did not account for this, unquote. So the idea that 16 degrees might be on the conservative side of an estimation is really scary.
Well, and I think, to be specific, I mean, one of the things they talk about are methane clath rates, which are basically, as it happens, is natural gas frozen into ice at the bottom of the oceans. And then if you can get your hands on that, there's a fantastic amount of methane natural gas tied up there. And it's not commercially feasible. But if that, I mean, that's just on top, exactly to the commenter's point. I mean, they're going to keep discovering new fossil fuel resources. And what we already know about is too much. So why keep searching through the Arctic for more and more of it?
Yes, and when you mentioned the story about the Gatwick Airport, there's an obvious analogy that for purposes of sensitivity I won't make in terms of recent news, but if you think about airports and you think about destruction, then you can pretty much figure out the analogy for yourself, can't you?
Yes. We'll leave that one there. But so here's the kicker for me, right? So we've talked about the moral and economic case for divestment, right? The economic case is that regulation is going to preclude burning all that fossil fuel. And so if you're paying paying in your stock price, or you're buying stock of a company that where that stock price is predicated on lots of reserves that can't be burned, you are in a bubble, right? You're not going to get your money back. That's the economic case, that the fossil fuel business model is going to collapse. The moral case for divestment says that you should not be involved in this activity that you know is morally reprehensible, much like abolitionism, right? You shouldn't be buying cotton to make, wear cotton in the United States in 1860, because that was part of the whole slave economy. Right? So there are major issues. We can see it laid out. We know that they can't burn this fossil fuel. The companies keep searching for more and more. And so the tie-in now is to something, again, very specific and very timely. There is a international trade agreement called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we've mentioned it on this show before, the TPP. Okay, the major objection that climate hawks should have to the TPP, at least in the form that we're aware of, because it's all being negotiated in secret, is that the TPP will allow major companies to sue in tribunals. They're not even U.S. courts. They're tribunals set up somewhere else, right? Of lawyers. A company can sue in that tribunal for what they feel is the loss of what they thought they were going to earn if a country imposes environmental regulation. To put that into specifics, if the United States imposes a carbon tax that reduces the use of fossil fuels, then a company like Exxon can sue in this very friendly tribunal for the anticipated profits they thought they were going to make over the next 100 years, right? Which would be trillions of dollars. And in fact, that TPP clause that allows them to sue for future profits that they haven't even gotten yet is an encouragement to explore and to get more reserves, because once you've identified the reserves, it goes in your back pocket. If the United States puts a carbon tax and you can't burn that fuel, then Exxon says, "Oh boy, Mr. Taxpayer, you owe me an extra $1 billion for that oil on the Gatwick Airport that I just discovered." So, in my mind, now all of a sudden, the TPP and this particularly heinous clause is tied up with the divestment movement, and we need to keep them linked up. The TPP is bad, but it's a get out of jail card for the whole oil industry to get their money back after the collapse of oil prices. Is that crazy thinking, DR, or am I so crazy I'm right?
You're absolutely right, and when you look at everything that's at stake, and just the reality that so many needed regulations could be just wiped out because of what's laid out in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the idea of this thing being implemented ought to keep people awake at night, because this
loss of sovereignty. Exxon's going to sue the United States in some court in God knows where, U.S. court.
And it's good to see that a lot of elected officials, including elected officials on a federal level, and also unions, and also climate hawks, are also standing up and saying that, basically not just no, but hell no to this idea. And hopefully their voices become loud enough that President Obama and the other promoters of this idea start thinking twice.
All right. Well, DR, we have to leave it there. We'll tell our listeners they can check out links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.wordpress.com. Please leave us a comment. Let us know what you think about the crazy opinions we have. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show, share us, like us, all kinds of good stuff. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes if you search for Massachusetts Climate Action in the podcast section. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.